I need caller 10, right? Wait. Now, at 800-636-1067, you'll win two tickets to Government Mule Friday, October 31st at Warner Theater. Tickets are on sale now. For tickets and more event information, visit thefandc.com/events. Yes, you did. Where's the audience? The audience loves that.
Yeah.
The audience is a huge fan of that.
The audience is proud of Darius.
Aren't they fired up, Darius? They're not? They don't care? Tap it applause.
Wow.
The courtesy clap.
That's disappointing.
For Darius. There we go. Thefandc.com/events.
I like it.
All right, neato gang. Call it 10-800-636-1067. Government Mule is a couple of the leftover guys from the Allman Brothers Band.
Okay.
So the Allman Brothers, Dickie Betts passed away, I think either this year or last year. Rest in peace. Greg Allman passed away a long time ago. So those other guys in the band formed their own band, and they play a lot of like jam band stuff, Southern Rock. They are pretty kick-ass. So that is a show in October that you can win tickets to right now if you're caller 10 at 800-636-1067. That's how that goes. It's Beltway Blitz time here. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Toby in for GP. We will start on the diamond, please, Darius. Robert White, a.k.a. Roberto Blanco, a.k.a. Bobby Blanco from the Bronx, Mass and Sports. Bobby, all-star game last night. What'd you make of it?
I thought the ending was pretty awesome. I mean, you know, all-star games around the four major league sports are, you know, always debated whether or not they're actually good. And you're looking at, like, the Pro Bowl and, you know, not being football anymore. The NBA all-star is just a three-point shooting contest, essentially. And, you know, the hockey, they've been innovative recently. That's been more interesting. But I feel like the MLB all-star game has always been probably the best, most consistently enjoyable all-star game. And it delivered. You get a couple home runs from some big stars. And then when you have a late, you know, inning rally to tie it late, obviously they're not going to play extra innings because it's, you know, an exhibition game. But having a swing off, basically mini home run derby to decide the thing, I think was pretty exciting. So I was all for that. I had a good time watching last night.
What'd you make of the Nationals appearances? Mackenzie Gore going three up, three down in his inning, and then James Wood 0 for 1, but also participating in the home run derby.
Yeah, I was, you know, it was good that they both got in. You know, I mean, the Nationals having one of the worst records, yet getting two all-stars into the, you know, afflict to the game was great, but I was kind of nervous that neither of them would actually play. You know, we saw the reports early in the afternoon that Mackenzie was going to get the fifth, and he came out there. I think he only threw like one or two pitches actually in the strike zone, but he got the three ground out, put up a zero. I was a little nervous there that he would be the one to cause the meltdown for the National League, but he got his three outs, which was good. And yeah, unfortunately that James basically reached on a fielder's choice and didn't get an actual base hit, but you know, good experience for both of them. I think it was cool at the end of the night after Schwarber won the thing. You saw, and my son is chiming in the background.
He made a good play.
James and Mackenzie kind of in the celebration. I mean, they're in the background of like a lot of the photos you saw from last night after the celebration. So it seemed like they had a good time, which is the whole point of the thing, right?
What do you and what does your son think, respectively, about the Nats trade deadline coming up here in a couple of weeks?
I think Callum wants to sell everyone who can, and I kind of agree with him. Everyone who's on expiring contract, even if you're just getting, you know, a bag of peanuts back, this is the time I think you're kind of drawing it to do. They'll never say it, but you might as well just kind of do a mini reset, add some pieces to the farm system, talking guys like Michael Socorro, if you can get anything for him, maybe Paul DeJong, now that he's healthy and people are looking for a bat. You know, I doubt you're going to be able to move like a guy like Josh Bell, but literally anyone on an expiring contract, if you can flip them, I would flip them. The big question, of course, is going to be Mackenzie Gore. Do the Nationals make a big swing there and try to move him at the deadline? I would expect them to answer every phone call they get about him and hear offers, but I would be surprised if they actually decided to move on from him at this point.
Who are some of the guys you're watching in the second half to see whether they're going to improve on their first half consistency, or who are some guys that you're going to keep a close eye on in the second half?
Well, obviously James, you know, I mean, that's not keeping a close eye. Everyone's going to tune in to watch James. Everyone, for as long as Mackenzie's here, everyone's going to tune in to watch Mackenzie pitch. You know, CJ should have been an all-star. He's worth a watch. I'm really tuning in actually to see, and hopefully we find out Friday, if Dylan Cruz is going to start a rehab assignment soon and then get back to the major leagues and be able to finish out the season healthy and productive. And we know he had a slow start to the year. We know he kind of struggled after making his debut last year. But remember, he's a big part of this core, young core moving forward. And we haven't seen him play for a couple of months now because of the oblique injury. And He was taking swings. He was taking full batting practice in Milwaukee over the weekend before the break. He's been able to throw from the outfield. So hopefully that means he's nearing a rehab assignment. Hopefully that rehab assignment can be pretty quick. Yep, and Callum agrees. And hopefully we can get him in back in the Major League lineup, and he can have a strong end to the season. That's what I'm looking forward to, seeing if he can bounce back before the offseason.
Similarly, what have you seen here from a couple of the kids, Dalen Lyle, and then, of course, Brady House there at third base with a nice two-homer game before the break?
Yeah, it was funny. Like I wrote about Brady's defense that day before the game, and you know I've been really pleasantly surprised with his glove at third base at the hot corner. You remember getting when he was drafted, you know everyone knew he had a power bat potential, but you know could he stick at shortstop? Would he even be a viable defensive option at third base because he's so big and athletic? And he's you know for a while his glove has been more impressive than his bat, and I think the bat is the part that we know is coming along. He hit the two home runs on Saturday. You know, I think bless you, Callum. I think he has been statistically one of the best. I mean, they've only played a handful, but the best third baseman that the Nationals have played this year. So that's been a pleasant surprise. And Dalen, I mean, he has been putting together good at bats. He had that like 12 or 13 game hitting streak just before the break. I think the week leading up to the break. So you know, he's been able to stick around. I know he went down for a little bit, but came right back up. You know, I mean, that's another good story for this Nationals farm system if he can stick around this season. I mean, when Dylan comes back, obviously a move's going to have to be made. Someone's going to have to clear space in the outfield for Dylan. But I think Dalen's proven that he is a good piece, maybe a trade piece down the line. I know they're kind of doing a reset, but, you know, he's proven that he could be a major leaguer. So that's a good sign for them.
Thank you, Bobby and Baby Blanco. Appreciate you joining us.
Oh, anytime. Say bye, Callum.
Baby Blanco
Baby
and Bobby Blanco,
Blanco from the Bronx. I love that.
That's awesome. Let's talk a little stadium talk, Darius. Joining us to talk about the stadium is Eric Flack from WUSA9. Eric, it is July 16th, so we are past the deadline. What does that mean?
Well, it means that people are starting to get nervous around the stadium agreement between D.C. and the Commanders. I've learned today that Maryland and Virginia have both reached out to the Commanders about trying to get back in the game, so to speak, for building the team's new stadium in the wake of this exclusivity clause expiring with D.C. Basically, as part of the agreement between the mayor and the team, the D.C. Council had until July 15th, which was yesterday, to approve the agreement without the team, the Commanders, being able to talk to anybody else. That window has expired, so now we're not back to square one, but the Commanders are no longer legally bound to only talk to D.C. Now, this doesn't mean that the D.C. stadium deal is dead by any means. D.C. Council has raised a number of red flags, specifically about the $1.1 billion taxpayer price tag that is attached to this deal, and have indicated that they're going to need some time to kind of scrutinize it before they approve it. What that timeline is, nobody really knows. But what this does mean is that they're entering a phase where they're kind of playing with fire, I think one source kind of told me, where is, you know, the Commanders have to start making contingency plans for what would happen if this D.C. RFK deal just kind of falls apart.
So for me, if I'm D.C., I'm not threatened certainly by Virginia. I mean, it, you know, unless the Commanders need to see memes or something, like that's empty. Maryland, I don't get the sense that they're really ready with a serious offer that's even on the table. I wouldn't be threatened by this, but maybe that's just my own cynicism. Eric, your thoughts?
I think Danny, that the deal with Maryland is that they have a site, and that you're right about Virginia is that it's all pie in the sky because there's just no site. But you know, Maryland has a site, and when you have a site, you have a chance. And so, you know, I read somewhere that, you know, publicly Wes Moore is saying, you know, we're not really focused on that. I think privately what I'm being told is that Maryland is just reminding the Commanders we are ready to go and ready to hammer something out if this deal falls apart. And I think, you know, there's a lot of timeline questions that are happening right now. I've been told today that, you know, if this vote extends past July, we're already talking about the stadium not being ready, even if it is in D.C. by the 2030 season, which was something that the team really, really wanted to see happen. But, you know, at a certain point, I think the team and possibly in almost certainly states like Maryland have to like be ready to go if in fact the unthinkable were to happen, which is that the deal just completely falls apart. And with, you know, politics and DC council specifically, I think unpredictability is the only thing that you can predict.
Yeah, I mean, so is that kind of the way that they're operating, that whatever their ultimate deadline is, obviously that July 15th deadline is passed, but whatever they set as the deadline that we can't wait any longer, are they just assuming they're going to get this thing done and they're going to go up until whatever they set that deadline is, and then if everything just falls apart, it's just going to be Maryland?
Yeah, I mean, I think that nobody wants, whether either the commanders nor DC council really want to see this deal fall apart. And I think the commanders would even privately tell you that they're pretty far down the road and have already publicly stated their desires to return home to D.C. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of rope as far as, you know, how far this thing will go. So I don't think there's going to be a timeline where if they hit like, you know, October, let's just say, and the commanders are like, forget it, we're going to Maryland, if the deal in D.C. is still alive and hasn't been voted down. But I think, again, I think it comes back to contingencies. I think it comes back to successful business people always have to know what the plan B is, even if it's not, you know, their preferred, you know, option. And I think that's where we're at, is that we have gotten to the point now where the commanders have to start making contingency plans, because a deal that they thought would have already been approved is now sitting with no approval and no real hard date or plan as to when it's even going to be taken up by DC Council.
Eric, thank you as always, buddy. Talk soon.
All right, see ya.
There he goes. That is Eric Flack, WUSA 9. Hit that local 53 sounder, please. Our guy Mitch Tischler, Monumental Sports Network. Mitch, where are you at? The Terry versus the team. What side are you on?
I mean, I'm 100% on Terry's side, given the caveat that the number that he's asking for doesn't start with a four. This is a guy who has, you know, been there and done that with everything this team has asked of him and all of the different shenanigans and bad situations he's had to deal with. And I think it's ironic that we're sitting here the same, you know, week that they announced that they're retiring Art Monk's jersey, because I think there are so many similarities and comparisons you can have between Art Monk the player in the, you know, when he was here and Terry McLaurin today.
When you look at what's going on here, do you think this is going to become standard operating procedure in terms of the way that they're going to play hardball with their players, or do you think this is something that's Terry specific?
You know, this is the first big deal that they've really had to iron out, and they have to think about this deal in the, you know, in the big picture with you know, how they're going to build this team and with the other contracts that might be coming up next year with Frankie Luvu or Laremy Tunsil and whoever else may come. But there's also a side of it where, you know, this might be NFL protocol. This might be what happens around the league with other superstars and other players, you know, who have been longtime players on their teams. But what frustrates me about it is that here in Washington, you're just starting to make that turn. You're just starting to go from being the embarrassing burgundy and gold, you know, franchise that they were for 30 years. You know, they won some football games last year. They're starting to do things the right way. Fandom is starting to come back. You know, this era of good feelings is just starting. And to have this, you know, blip in the road is frustrating to me, because despite how everyone else does things, that doesn't mean you have to do that here. And the fact that they haven't talked in a month is not the best news in the world, because it means that they're not even particularly necessarily close, probably, in what they're looking, in what both sides are looking for. And so, you know, it's a tough thing to see, because, you know, we know who Terry is, and listening to the emotion in his voice yesterday when he was at Eastern Motors talking about, you know, all the milestones in his life that have happened in the Washington area, growing up, buying a home, getting married, going from a third round pick to a, you know, every year 1,000-yard receiver, going from the dregs of the world at quarterback throwing the ball to him to having, you know, a potential, you know, NFL superstar throwing to him. He deserves every opportunity to get paid. And again, as long as that number isn't a, you know, astronomical number, you know, if it's a matter of a couple mil, I'm willing, because of the player that he is and the person that he is and the leader he is in that team, to extend myself a little bit for him.
Mitch, have you guys discussed much this whole second round picks not signing type deal? Like, this is a really massive sports story, and I think we're occupied with a lot of other things, understandably, but Trey Amos isn't alone. I guess what, it's 29 of his other buddies haven't signed just yet? What is going on with the second round picks?
Yeah, listen, it's a wild situation, because we actually are seeing it a little bit with the first rounder, Shamar Stewart out of Cleveland. You know, he's back practicing at Texas A&M apparently all summer, and starting to look at, you know, whether he should or could go back to school. The whole NIL world has turned things upside down, because players are making money and not happy to just be slotted where they should be slotted. I think particular to Trey Amos, what's interesting or what's important about it is a corner who might be able to step in and start right away. These are the reps that he needs. These are the training camp reps that a corner needs to get prepared and learn how to play this game at a professional level. And I don't know what the tipping point's going to be, what the hinge point is to start getting these second round deals done. But I can sit here and live with Terry McLaurin not necessarily practicing in training camp, because he's a guy who has been there and done that, and obviously will be able to step in and play. Those reps being missed by Trey Amos would be huge, and I think detrimental to a very, very thin position on this Washington secondary. And so, you know, we're sitting here talking about whether Trey Amos is going to sign and be there. There's a lot of question marks there in the secondary, particularly a corner for them. And I'm as concerned about those reps as I am about Terry and what's happening with his contract.
Mitch, appreciate the time. Always great insight.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
See you, buddy. There he goes. That's Mitch Tischler. So we've got some more Terry discussion to have. We'll do that next in a moment. Mark Schlereth joins us at 5. I don't want to ask which team you're on, team or team Terry. We'll do that in the 5 o'clock hour.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's where it is. I mean, I think that's, to me, you know, again, you know him. You know, he's got a track record here. And it's not a track record full of injuries, or it's not a track record full of, you know, embarrassing moments for the organization, but he's too talented to let go. Like, there's been none of that with Terry, right? Like, there's just been none of it. You know, he's done everything that you would ask a guy to be, to do, and he's been everything you would ask a guy to be. And so, to me, it's, again, I'm not trying to negotiate for either side here, but I think there's a number that's less than what Jamar Chase is making, but maybe more than what some other guys ahead of Terry.
That was David Aldridge with us yesterday. Grant Danny on the Fan, so be in for GP. Mark Schlereth joins us at 5 to talk about my hero, Art Monk. We will discuss Art Monk at 5 p.m. with Mark Schlereth. If you didn't hear, might not have, because so much has been going on with this whole Terry Eastern Motors, where your job's your credit press conference from yesterday. I might call it that, your job's your credit press here from Terry.
Mm-hmm.
They were tying Art Monk's jersey. Rightly so. Yes. Hooray for that. Could not be more excited about that. Good job, team. Good job, Harris, Rails, Magic Johnson, Mark Hine. Whoever's in charge, you did great. You made this 45-year-old zilch very, very happy. So I can't imagine how happy Art Monk is. I didn't even do anything. And you're retiring Art Monk's jersey. I imagine he's probably happy.
And they did well, because you even thought about going to Nubs Field.
That's how moved I was by it. I went to multiple ticket sites last night to think about purchasing a ticket.
Wow.
I have been Heisman trophying tickets to Nubs Field for 15 years. People eventually just stopped asking, which, mm-hmm. you know, but it was flattering. Like, hey, this guy loves sports. His whole life is sports. He's a sports person. He talks about sports on the radio. He probably loves the football team. Would he like to go to a game? Nope. Nope. Just me and four other guys had great college football seasons. Heisman trophy. I got a list for you. It's not a good list if you're Terry. Let me run down it real quick. You'll see who is on this list. Jamar Chase, 1. Justin Jefferson, 2. Tyreek Hill, 3. CeeDee Lamb, 4. A.J. Brown, 5. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 6. Malik Nabers, 7. Nico Collins, 8. Mike Evans, 9. Garrett Wilson, 10. That's a list of top wide receivers, according to the same people that told you Jaden Daniels is the 5th best quarterback.
Mm.
So, if you want to get mad and tell me they don't know what they're talking about, then do you have to take back Jaden's the fifth best quarterback in the NFL? You got to unscrew that light bulb? That's kind of what I'm saying here. He's in the others receiving votes, by the way, with my dude Pookie Nukes, Brian Thomas Jr., DK Metcalf, T. Higgins, Devontae Adams, and a couple others. Now, whether you've got a legit gripe that he belongs ahead of Mike Evans at this stage, future Hall of Famer, guys, all Mike Evans does is get out of bed, stretch his little limbs. Actually, they're big limbs. He's very big and strong.
Yeah, very big.
Go for 1,000 yards and catch 10 touchdown passes a year. What's Mike Evans going to do this year? Go for 1,000 yards, catch 10 tutties. What's he going to do next year? Just wait. 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. That's what Mike Evans do. The rest of you, I don't know what you're doing. Nico Collins, you could quibble with if you wanted to. I happen to think Collins is awesome and ascending. But you could take him out and put one of the other honorable mention guys on. You could put Nacua on, who when he's healthy, and that's a when, that's an if, but has been dominant. Brian Thomas last year had an absurd football season. Absurd. And he's ascending. So the point is, you got a list of the top 10 wideouts, and Terry McLaurin's not on it.
There's a couple of guys I'd argue him over, but I think the general consensus is a lot of people have him in this range. According to this, the honorable mention, I don't know if they ordered these according to how they ranked, according to
how close they were.
Yeah, I don't know. But regardless, if you're going off of that, then he would have been like number 11. But I think this is about right where he, you know, I'm going to have him higher. I understand that. I'm a big Terry guy. I'd probably have him ahead of Nico still. I'd probably have him ahead of Mike Evans at this point in his career. I don't think he's had the career that Mike Evans has had. I don't think there's any discussion there. You know, Wilson's at 10, would you argue there? That's not really what we have to spend a whole lot of time on here. But I think this is interesting because it gives you kind of a view around football. And I think this can be twofold here, Danny. I think on one side, people that are higher on Terry McLaurin, like myself, you know, maybe get a dose of reality that maybe around football, he isn't viewed as a consensus top 10 guy because he's clearly not in the top 10 of this list. This is also a dose of reality to people that act like he's some jag that is worthless and not a number one receiver, right?
No, that's fair too. That's fair too.
Like on both sides of this, he's a dude. Maybe he's not the dude, right? Like he is someone. He's right in the conversation with guys like Garrett Wilson. He's right there with Mike Evans, those guys. We can have discussions about those dudes. And I think sometimes when we do these lists, Danny, we do a cutoff point and you do the, you know, top 10 is a nice round number. I think sometimes the easier way to do it, and I think what some people start doing with their lists, and Warren Sharp kind of did this with his quarterback list when we talked to him a little bit earlier, you do tiers, right? We can quabble about so-and-so versus so-and-so, but in reality, they're probably a 95 and a 96. And I think sometimes when if we do that, I think we understand that Terry is what? Would you say maybe tier three? Tier four? Like, tier one to me is pretty obvious. It's Ja'Marr Chase. It's Justin Jefferson. I think it's kind of ironic that they have Tyreek Hill above A.J. Brown. I tend to agree with that just off of potential and skill and what he's shown. But A.J. Brown to me is in tier one. Mm-hmm. And then it's like the CeeDee Lambs. And then, you know, people are going to argue maybe Amon-Ra and Neighbors and those guys. But I think Terry's in like that tier three. And I think he fits in there with the Nico Collins, Mike Evans, Garrett Wilson, Puka Nacua. Like, I think you take your pick of those sorts of guys.
Can I go back to a word you used that I thought was awesome? Did you say quabble?
Yes.
I love that. Because that's like quibble and squabble together.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's a word or not.
I don't think it is, but it should be.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get past, you made good points in there. I heard quabble, and I went, I want that. I love that. My now seven-year-old, when he was little, when he had his big pacifier in, we called him the Wubbanubs. I don't know if that's the official name for it or not, where it's like the stuffed animal attached to the pacifier to help you help the little kid kind of help put it back in his mouth or whatever, right? And he couldn't say words great. He got the thing in his mouth, whatever. He couldn't say downstairs. So he called downstairs da-dounce. I think da-dounce is awesome.
Yes.
We still say da-dounce in our home. Like my wife, all my sons, not my little five-month-old, he doesn't say anything. He screams a lot in the middle of the night, though. But all our kids, we still use da-dounce.
I like it.
I want quabble as part of the thing. I want quabble to be a word that we go, dude, are you quibbling and squabbling with me? You're freaking quabbling, bro.
I'm Googling it to see if it's a word.
It's definitely not.
I don't think it is.
It's definitely not.
I don't think it is, but maybe we make it a thing.
I'm saying that it is a blend of quibble and squabble.
Well, this is AI saying this, according to Google.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
There's no articles written about it.
I guess there can't take much from AI, huh?
Like, is it a wombo? Like an old school official wombo? Which I grew up doing. We did that all the time.
So like, it's in Urban Dictionary, so take that for what it's worth.
Now, does it mean anything dirty and filthy?
It does not.
Okay, good. Like, dude, I was involved in such a nasty quabble last night. I bonged four beers and...
Yeah, generally, Urban Dictionary on company Wi-Fi at work is not a great idea.
It means you're rolling the dice.
Quabble, I think, is okay.
The secondary meaning of quabble. I didn't know what she was down for, man. We end up quabbling.
Yeah, I don't know.
The whole thing. The quabble. Oh, that's awesome. I love that. I got sidetracked by quabble. Anyway, I don't mean to quabble with what you're saying.
Okay.
The top 10 to me is reserved for all the things that a receiver does. And I know that sounds stupid and elementary. And I guess it kind of is as I'm replaying it in my mind. But it means you need to be all of the following things. A high volume catch guy, big yards, and score. There are going to be some years. Again, I always point this. Megatron had a year. Calvin Johnson had a year where we had like one or two touchdowns. One of the great anomalies in the history of sports.
Yeah.
Like the perfect robot sent from the future to kill John Connor and Sarah Connor had one touchdown one year, whatever it was, in his Hall of Fame career. Because he got tackled at the one-inch line a million times. The Lions offense stunk. You know the whole story. But other than that, it generally means you are 7, 8, 9, 10, sometimes a lot more touchdown-wise, whether it's they can't stop you in the red zone, whether it's you're catching it in the field of play and running for a touchdown, etc. Last year was the first year Terry fulfilled two of the three. He's never been a high-volume touchdown guy. Now, a lot of that's probably crappy quarterbacking. A lot of that's probably, you know, Scott Turner was calling plays here for way too long. Some of it's to be forgiven.
Sure.
But even on bad teams, Malik Nabers had 7. Who's the Giants quarterback situation is atrocious on stilts, right? I mean, you look at all the years where teams aren't good, you still get the elite wideout who's scoring 7, 8, 9 double-digit touchdowns, et cetera, without undulation. There are going to be some years where you get in, some years you get stopped at the goal line, some it's a little bit fickle. 13 is such a career anomaly that he generally probably deserve to be in the 5, 6, 7 range.
Sure.
But that's the first time we've seen anything like that since his rookie year when he went for 7. He's never been a volume catch guy. He's never been a big yardage guy. He has never had the kind of year that CeeDee Lamb now routinely has. Where CeeDee Lamb is going for well over 100 catches, well over 1,100, 1,200, 1,300, 2 years ago, 1,700 yards. He'll never have that year ever. That's, to me, what a top 10 any given year. We talk about it with quarterbacks all the time. What does it look like? You kind of know it when you see it, right? Are you having a top 10 quarterback season? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Jalen Hurts had one, didn't have one, back to having one, then win the Super Bowl. You know what it looks like. We all just do. That's what it looks like. McLaurin is in the hall of really good, and there's nothing wrong with that. It always sounds like a criticism. It's not. We did this. I always point to this name. We did this with Ryan Kerrigan every year. People were furious that he wasn't Von Miller. Please don't be furious that he's not Von Miller. They make one Von Miller. They make one Myles Garrett. They make one
Khalil Mack.
Khalil Mack, thank you, is the other name I was thinking of. There are a couple TJ Watts running around out there.
Yeah.
Right? Terry McLaurin's really, really good. But the team, I think, could sort of point to this as it's, you know, they're aware of all this data too. And then unless they care about an executive poll. But the point is, he's never had, and north of 30, I would seriously doubt you ever see a year where he goes for 127 catches and 1,700 yards like Jamar Chase just did, like CeeDee Lamb did 2 years ago, like Justin Jefferson does the instant he's healthy. I mean, missing some time, Jefferson last year went for 100 catches, 1,533 yards, and 10 touchdowns. He was on pace for more than that a couple seasons ago. And again, it's not fair to say he's not the best in the league, but that's what we're talking about for payment, right? Does that matter to you? Excuse me. Does that matter to you guys? 800-636-1067 as I try to burp while doing the tease? That's the question. Hard to do Like, I sense it coming. I was like, am I going to be able to get this out? That was a bit of a quabble, too, right there. Did you feel that?
Yeah. Voice and reflexes were quabbling right there.
That's a reflux quabble. Come quabble with us. 800-636-1067. The same group of people. It's got Jaden fifth as Terry outside the top 10. Does that affect any discussion for you guys? Does that change anything? Want to hear from you guys next before Mark Schlereth joins us at 5. Art Monk's teammate, Mark Schlereth, joins us at 5. Until then, 800-636-1067 is your telephone number to reach us. Grant and Danny on the fan. Tobes in for GP. The conglomerate of executives, coaches, front office guys that brought you Laremy Tunsil's number 7, I think. Or was it 8? I can't remember which.
7.
7. Thank you, Tobes. 7 on the left tackle or the tackle list. Jaden Daniels is 5 on the quarterback list. Had Terry McLaurin also receiving votes on the top 10 list for wideouts entering 2025. You could quibble with a couple. I might put him ahead of Nico Collins. If I'm starting a team, I'd probably take Nico Collins because he's 24. But again, you're not getting me to complain. If you toss a coin and end up with Terry, that's fine. The deposits in here are great. But I guess my point is, that's not the league perception. Now, it doesn't mean he doesn't deserve anything. He's not in the top 10, so that's I'm more addressing here, Tobes.
Sure.
The folks that are going, he's top 5, he's top 6, he's top 7, he's top this. Not according to the league.
Now, I do want to point this out, that while this is a great ranking to get executives, there was also one executive or someone that ranked Lamar Jackson as a 6th best quarterback. So sometimes you get these lists and they are good. Like I don't think that these are people mailing it in, putting stupid lists together, but sometimes they have some pretty bad opinions. But yeah, I mean, I think that the general consensus around the National Football League, if you polled a majority of fans around the league and you kind of showed them this list, I think they would generally agree with most of it. And, you know, I think you could, again, quabble with a few of these, but I think that Terry's kind of in that right range. I would have him higher, but I have no issue with that. It also doesn't change my opinion that they should pay him that $30+ million contract. The guy that is right ahead of him, that's the last dude on the top 10, just got a $32.5 million. And I get that the age is different with Garrett Wilson being 24 years old, but that's kind of the range that he's going to want to be paid in. And I have no issue doing that. So this doesn't, looking at this list, yeah, it's maybe not great for Terry's camp, but it also still doesn't change my opinion that that's kind of the market value where he goes. And if he were to go elsewhere, he would get paid a contract similar to what Garrett Wilson got. So it doesn't mean that you just get to, because he's in town, get the hometown discount.
And I think that's an essential point here. I think it might be what Jupe at 800-636-1067 might be the point he's making. What's up, buddy? You're on the fan.
Hey, what's going on, Danny Tobes?
Hey, buddy.
How you fellas?
Good, pal.
What's going on, man?
All right. All right, man. So listen, there's one of the things that I think is not talked about enough compared to players like Jefferson and Chase is, one, not having that bona fide number 2 wide receiver opposite of him. 2, they don't motion him like they do players like CeeDee Lamb, so on and so forth. And 3, they don't force feed him the ball like they do those said players. If Terry was a diva and like demanded the ball, honestly, in my opinion, and I'm standing 10 toes down on this, if you put Terry in those situations such as Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, I'm willing to bet he's putting up similar numbers. That's all I got for y'all.
Appreciate you, buddy. So I think that's always the fun thing in sports, is to do that. To go, what if this guy played for someone else? We're talking about how good a quarterback he is or something like that, right? When Dallas went 12-5 2 years ago, CeeDee Lamb had 1,700 yards and change.
Mm-hmm.
So to say, and I'm not picking on Jupe, it's a good phone call, but to go, well, they just force-feed CeeDee Lamb because he's a diva. They actually force-feed him because you get incredibly productive offense when you do it. You see what I'm saying? All those years, this is the point I always used to make. And it used to piss me off when Terry would go quarters at a time without a target. And I'm going, how could you? Your offense sucks so bad. At least try to throw it to your best player sometimes. But there's still a happy medium. If you're coordinating for your professional life, and you're quarterbacking for your professional life, you'd probably find a way to if it was the best option, you'd get the ball to the best option more often, right?
Yeah, it is interesting because I've always said, like, I don't know what Terry would do with it, but I'd love to see it one time where he goes into a game and he gets, like, 13 targets, mm-hmm. 8 catches, and just see what he does with it. But he's never been that kind of receiver. It's an odd dichotomy, like you're saying. Like, I think he's truly a special number one type receiver who probably ranks somewhere in that 8 to 12 range in terms of where he would be on this list. But at the same point, you look around at the guys on this list and how many of these dudes are the 100 catch a year, 1,000 plus yard, 8-10 touchdown guys, and Terry doesn't necessarily fit that mold, but I don't think it precludes him from ranking where he does.
So he's gotten, I think his career high is 134 targets. That would have ranked 16th in the NFL last year. And so, and well, let me put a pin in that. Andrew Warrington. What's up, man?
What's up, Andrew?
Hey, what's up, guys? Yeah, this is right exactly what I'm going to be talking about. 2024 season, he had 117 targets with 82 receptions. That's a 70% of catch rate.
Which is absurd, by the way.
And that was, which is ridiculous.
Yep.
It obviously was his highest. His career, he's a 63.4, which is still obscene.
Mm-hmm.
Of course he's not a high catch rate. He got less targets than people got catches. So how can we force feed him? How can we give him the high catch rate? How, you know, he's going to get a bunch of yardage when he's not getting that. We spent all year begging for them to move him to side to side. It's just, it feels like we're not being consistent on what we want.
I appreciate you, Andrew. And that's why I wanted to put a pin in the convo, because you're about to make the point. And so I had this conversation years ago with Grant when I was saying Josh Doctson is a zilch, and he heard from coaches that how great Josh Doctson was. And this guy's awesome. This guy's a baller. And I'm going, okay, so you think Jay Gruden is stupid? Is Kirk Cousins blind? If he was so good, are they just not thrown to the open guy who could do so much?
Yes.
My point is, he's this big, awkward dude that doesn't get open and doesn't separate, and he's not special. That was my point. And I was proven correct. But that's neither here nor there. I'm not just bringing that up.
You want a pat on the back?
Well, yes, actually. If anyone has one, I'd like a Danny was correct that time backpack. But the point was, like, there's some push and pull here. I'm going, when your offense is terrible, give the ball to your best player.
Mm-hmm.
When they're scoring at will against Atlanta, I don't care that Terry McLaurin had one catch for whatever yards. You go up and down the field, I'm not going to say peep. But when you can't move the ball and your best player goes a half with one target or nothing, see Philadelphia that first came up there or whatever, I'm going, hey, you got to do something different. But there's also probably some truth in, if he was that great, again, it sounds like I'm knocking the best offensive player we've got, right? If he was that special, that great, the ball would find him more.
Yeah.
It is a dependent position, but again, it's not as if you don't end up 40, 50, 60 targets shy of the league leaders every year just because people are stubborn. Because the offensive coordinator is going, no, it's better to get the ball to Lamine Zacchaeus. Or Sam Howell, when they throw it 650 times, is going, no. Not 17. I want it to go to Deami Brown. You know what I mean? Like, there's some truth in the middle there.
Well, and I'm interested to see, because you talk about the targets versus the receptions, and last year basically caught everything he was thrown. And you look at the targets he had last year was the second fewest in his career. And it goes back to his rookie season, the last time he had that number of targets. So he had 93 his rookie year, last year 117. Every other year he's been over that. But it was the second most catches he's had in his career. What if he averaged that out? So 2020 had 134 targets, 130 in 21, down to 120 in 22, but then back up to 132. What if he got 135 targets next year and you kept some sort of efficiency? I mean, you're getting a guy up there towards that 100 catch mark. You're getting 90, 95. I'd be curious if they change things, but you're right. I mean, it's something that I've been preaching for years, like get him the football more. But everybody that stepped in here, multiple offensive coordinators step in here, and we seem to have the same conversation, less so last year than we have before. But it was, why isn't Terry getting the ball more? We had it early in the year, yep. And then eventually built that chemistry with Jaden. But I'd be curious, you know, when you come back in year two with Jaden, a much better quarterback, would you see some of that productivity take a hike?
Mark Schlereth is going to join us at 5 to talk about my childhood hero, Art Monk. That is next on The Fan.